It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 56 degrees. Only 51 registering out at the airport, where they have southeast winds at 8 miles per hour, 77% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. They're calling for areas of fog today, but otherwise mostly sunny skies, high near 56, northeast winds to 5. Mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 48, northeast winds to 5, becoming completely calm tonight. And for tomorrow, partly sunny skies with a high of 64, northwest winds to 5, turning to the northeast tomorrow afternoon. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kirsten Dobroth sits down with Senator Lisa Murkowski, and a report from the Iditarod by Dylan Simard, and a memorial in Dutch Harbor for the only Unionex soldier killed fighting in World War II. Those stories and more after this.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A high-profile defamation court battle rooted in allegations of domestic violence is over between actors Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Moments ago, a Virginia jury sided with Depp, mostly. Jurors found Depp's ex-wife defamed him in a Washington Post op-ed piece in which she wrote about being a survivor of abuse. Depp sued for $50 million. Today, he got $15 million. Heard countersued for $100 million. Today, the jury awarded her $2 million. Visceral reactions erupted on social media, not only in favor of Depp, but specifically against Heard. Debate over the case amplified by the impact of the Me Too movement that advocated for survivors of abuse to speak out. NPR's Jacqueline Diaz has been following the case, and she speaks to the implications of it.
For those watching the high-profile defamation case, it came down to much more than just cash. It was a case played out on social media. Early Wednesday, responses were pouring in on Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok. Advocates for domestic abuse victims say this will have a major impact on survivors and when people report on abuse. Heard testified she was abused by Depp. But for Depp supporters, the verdict was something to celebrate. Outside the courtroom, cheers and celebrations were captured on camera.
NPR's Jacqueline Diaz reporting. The Uvalde community saying its goodbyes to Robb Elementary School teacher Irma Garcia, who was among the 21 people killed in the mass shooting last week, and her husband Joe Garcia, who died just 2 days later of a heart attack. Today, police and civilians on motorcycles led the procession as the Garcia's coffins arrived at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. The U.S. is sending another package of weapons and equipment to Ukraine, including advanced rocket systems. NPR's Jackie Northam reports Secretary of State Antony Blinken says this shipment of security assistance worth $700 million is for defense purposes only.
Secretary Blinken says this latest round of weapons are the most advanced provided to Ukraine in the four-month-old war. He says the sophisticated weapons bound for Ukraine will help repel Russian aggression and put Ukraine in a better position at the negotiating table, but will not be used to launch offensive attacks.
The Ukrainians have given us assurances that they will not use these systems against targets on Russian territory. There is a strong trust bond between Ukraine and the United States, as well as with our allies and partners.
This latest tranche of weaponry brings a total U.S. military assistance to Ukraine to roughly $4.6 billion. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Washington.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 177 points at the close, roughly 0.5%, ending the day at 32,812. You're listening to NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Several congressional candidates made stops in Kodiak over the weekend for Crabfest, including Senator Lisa Murkowski. In between meet and greets with constituents and the Crabfest parade, she also stopped by the studio and spoke to KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth.
Last time you were here, virtually at least, was Comfish. When I saw you last. And I wanted to start out with that because one of the big concerns that people brought up at the end of the legislative session that you were a part of was the pebble mine and the future of it. And I wanted to ask you about the recent proposed determination regarding that and the EPA.
Right. So it was the 25th of May. The EPA came out with this PD, this proposed determination, effectively moving forward with a veto of the Pebble project. Now, keep in mind that during the Trump administration, it was determined that this project was a project that should not go forward, should not be permitted. So the EPA has taken a regulatory step that would effectively be that permanent veto. As folks, I think I'm pretty sure most everyone knows, I have come out in opposition of the Pebble project. I believed that the Trump administration in rejecting that permit was the right decision. I have expressed some concern about the EPA regulatory process because we do worry about a precedent of a 404 veto being utilized for other resource development projects. I've also said that I think that what those in the region hope for is permanent protection. And so if we really want to have enduring protections, the best way to do that is through legislation. So I have encouraged a broader stakeholder process to do just exactly that.
And one other thing you had spoken about was the fishery disaster designations. Yeah. That's obviously top of mind for people here across Alaska. Has there been any movement at a congressional level to maybe expedite the payment program to skippers and crew?
We, Senator Sullivan and I are both engaged in legislative efforts to really improve the process, because right now I'll just use the word dysfunctional. I mean, when you have a disaster declared in 2018 and you don't get it through that process for payment until 2022, that's flawed. That needs to be addressed and needs to be corrected. And so we've been working with the administration. Secretary Raimondo, who is the Secretary of Commerce, I think got a real earful when she heard from us about this backlog and what we need to do to accelerate that. But we need to do it legislatively as well. And this is where the legislation that Senator Sullivan and I, working with Senator Wicker, Senator Cantwell, are making some progress. We were successful in getting a good portion of fisheries disaster funding directed to the state of Alaska. That helps, but we've got to have a better system, and that's what we're continuing to address.
For everybody around the country, I think this week it's been particularly horrifying to see what happened in Texas. As we're figuring out what happened, what to do next, is this the time to address gun laws? What are the next steps that we need to take as a country?
There's a lot of discussion about what we should do, what we should not do. But one thing that I hope that Americans can agree to is that doing nothing is not an option. Right now, we have a system that is allowing our children to be slaughtered in their schools, in a place where, as a parent, as a community, you want to believe that when the kids go to school, they're going to be safe. I have supported every increment of funding, every bill that has come forward that talks about different school safety programs, but I don't think our answer is to turn our schools into these fortresses. I don't think it is to arm our teachers to act as, in addition to educating the kids and comforting the kids, now be the one defending the children. That is not where the answer lies either. And so I think we need to look very, very, very critically at what we have in front of us in terms of enforcement that is out there on the books, but we have yet to actually put in place. There's a lot of discussion right now about raising the age of gun ownership. That's something that it's fair to say we should be looking at. But I also recognize that for so many Alaskans, it's the 14-year-old boy who's going out and bringing home ducks and birds for the family out in the villages. And so how we ensure that not only we are protecting that Second Amendment right, we're also recognizing that in a state like Alaska, where guns are really a very important tool, how we work to make sure that our children are not the ones who pay for this freedom that we have under the Second Amendment.
On another topic that's gotten a lot of attention recently, Roe v. Wade, mm-hmm. You expressed your disappointment in the leaked opinion that came out. What is the next step for that?
Well, the next step is clearly coming from the Supreme Court. It's anticipated that the decision in the Dobbs case will probably come down probably the end of June. In the meantime, I have been working with several different members on both sides of the aisle to see if it is possible for us to actually advance a measure that would codify Roe versus Wade, that would codify it in such a way that recognizes that a woman has that choice to make an exceptionally difficult decision, recognizing that there are limits in time and circumstance that is appropriate under the law, and to put in place a level of certainty, I think, to women in this country that your reproductive rights will be protected. So I'm hopeful that there will be that opportunity to do that in these intervening weeks.
That was KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth speaking with Senator Lisa Murkowski. Motorsports enthusiasts from all around Kodiak gathered at the head of the Olds River over the weekend for this year's Iditarock, a 34-mile off-road challenge open to teams of runners, dirt bikers, four-wheelers, and side-by-siders. KMXT's Dylan Simard reports one team broke the all-time speed record at this year's event.
Around 40 participants total met at an unmarked trailhead for this year's off-road challenge, which starts at Olds River and onto Lake Mayum, then to Saltery Cove and out through the American River. It's a treacherous course even for experienced riders, and that's part of the appeal, according to rider Mike Floyd.
We're hoping to not get stuck a lot and avoid all the big mud holes. Take it easy, try not to break nut and hit a tree or anything like that, and then slow and easy wins the race, usually.
Kodiak residents John Neff and Perry Nelson set a new team course dirt bike record, completing the 34-mile trail in 1 hour and 27 minutes. Unfortunately, it didn't end well for everyone. The Coast Guard confirmed one participant was medevaced near Lake Mayum. He was taken to base Kodiak, where he was met by local EMS and treated for a broken leg. The event raised $1,400, which organizers plan to reinvest in the trail. They are optimistic that if they can repair the trail, more people might be able to enjoy it for the challenge next year. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
Private George Fox was the only Unganak soldier killed fighting in World War II and any war since. But for nearly 80 years, he's rested in an unmarked grave in Unalaska, until Monday. Fox was finally honored for his sacrifice in a special Memorial Day celebration. KUCB's Maggie Nelson reports the ceremony was nearly a decade in the making and included an honorary gravestone, speeches from Fox's old acquaintances, and a 21-gun salute.
When was he born?
1920.
Where was he raised?
Unalaska Island.
Who did he serve?
United States Army.
It's an extra special Memorial Day in Unalaska. Even the weather is fair. And this year, the community is honoring a decorated fallen veteran, Army Private George Fox. Fox is the only known Unangak soldier killed in action in World War II and any war since.
NCO Beach.
His last words.
Wish all love.
Who was he fighting?
Nazi monsters.
How was he killed?
Nazi bomb.
Killed in action.
Private George Fox.
Killed in action.
An Army color guard leads a procession of several dozen people along Front Beach in Unalaska. They chant together, holding small American flags and images of Fox. They're heading to the island's cemetery for a long-awaited burial ceremony for him. Fox was born in 1920 on Unga Island, the largest of the Shumagin Islands. Census data shows that he and his mother moved to Unalaska less than a decade later, and he joined the military when he was about 21 years old. Fox was killed fighting in Ardea, Italy in 1944. About 5 years later, his body was returned to Unalaska, and he was buried in an unmarked grave next to his mother. And for nearly 80 years, Fox remained there, without recognition for his sacrifice. Until Monday.
This time, please join me in a 21-gun salute, followed by taps.
Following the solemn salute, Fox's gravestone was unveiled. Officials from a number of organizations gave speeches. Had it not been for the low, heavy Aleutian fog, Senators Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski, as well as members of Fox's family, would have also come to speak in his honor. Mike Livingston works for the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association and has been researching and battling for years to get Fox the recognition he deserves. He says even though some of the special guests didn't make it, the ceremony was a great success.
It really is a decade in the making. You know, a lot of people have been working on this to try to find out the information we needed to honor Private George Fox. And a lot of people have been working to get the gravestone ordered. We're just grateful for all the support.
Livingston stood in the Unalaska High School gym after the stone was unveiled, glowing with joy as he chatted with locals and military officials. As far as his emotions, he says, he had a lot of them.
A great deal of pride and happiness for the honoring of Private George Fox. Certainly, it's sometimes hard to hold back the tears, you know, but just absolute joy that Gertrude Savarni could be up there with us to unveil Private George's Fox's grave. It looks really sharp.
And then to have Unangak elder Gertrude Savarni was Fox's neighbor growing up. She says he was a friend to her older brother. After he died in the war, Savarni would walk to his grave every year and place a small American flag on the overgrown plot. This year, thanks to Livingston's planning and outreach, her small flag was just one of several dozen that were brought by supporters from across the state who made the trek up the hill to his grave. Savarni says to fully understand what this recognition means, people need to know the region's history.
When I was 12 years old, my village survived the bombing of Unalaska Island by the Japanese, and shortly thereafter, we were forced to leave home.
The U.S. government forcibly removed over 800 Unangak people from their homes in the Aleutian and Pribilof region following the World War II bombing.
We were dropped off in abandoned canneries, gold mines, and logging camps in southeast Alaska, stripped of our civil liberties, and it changed our lives forever. But even as this was happening to us, our sons and daughters, our brothers, sisters were signing up to fight for the United States in the war.
She says that patriotic spirit is in part why she and others survived those camps.
This ceremony today symbolizes the recognition of the many Unangan people who served in their country well. If I could wish anything, I would wish that we would all teach our children to care deeply about the welfare of their friends and neighbors. We are nothing without the community around us.
Fox's marker is engraved with his own words, "Wish all love." They come from a letter he wrote to his father the year he died. Here's Livingston reading that letter.
I would sure like to be fishing. This makes three seasons that I have missed fishing. We have transferred into infantry and seen some action. I'm getting along fine. Don't worry about me. Write often, and I wish you all the love. We'll write more later. Your son, George.
The gravestone also includes Fox's name, his date of birth, his honors, including a Purple Heart, and his recognition as an Unangah warrior. In on Alaska, I'm Maggie Nelson.
Christ is risen.
Indeed, he is risen.
Christos was Christ. Christos alakoveko. Alakoveko.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the Art of All Things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
Disco Demolition Night was an ill-fated baseball promotion on July 12, 1979, at Comiskey Park in Chicago, Illinois. At the climax of the event, a crate filled with disco records was blown up on the field between games of the twi-night doubleheader between the Chicago White Sox and the Detroit Tigers. Many of those in attendance had come to see the explosion rather than the games and rushed onto the field after the detonation. The playing field was so damaged by the explosion and by the fans that the White Sox were required to forfeit the second game to the Tigers. In the late 1970s, dance-oriented disco music was popular in the United States, particularly after being featured in hit films such as 1977 Saturday Night Fever. Disco sparked a backlash from rock music fans. This opposition was prominent enough that the White Sox, seeking to fill seats at Comiskey Park during a lackluster season, engaged Chicago shock jock and anti-disco campaigner Steve Dahl. Dahl's sponsoring radio station was 97.9, so attendees would pay 98 cents and bring a disco record, and between games, Dahl would destroy the collected vinyl in an explosion. White Sox officials had hoped for a crowd of 20,000, about 5,000 more than usual. Instead, at least 50,000 packed the stadium, with thousands more continuing to sneak in after the gates had been closed. Disco Demolition Night preceded and may have helped precipitate the decline of disco in 1979. Some scholars and disco artists have described the event as expressive of racism and homophobia. Disco Demolition Night remains well known as one of the most extreme promotions in Major League history. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Wednesday. It is the first day of June, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:18 and it won't set again until 10:57. That will give us 17 hours and 40 minutes of daylight. That's a gain of 2 minutes and 42 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low for this date was 34. That was set in 1943, 1984, and 2017. And a record high for this date was 72. That was set in 1964, and that record is safe today. It's 56 up here on Burrow Hill, 51 out at the airport, where they have southeast winds to 8 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. They're calling for areas of fog today, but mostly sunny skies, high near 56, which is where we are here on Signal Hill. Mostly cloudy tonight, low around 48, northeast winds turning to the northwest and becoming completely calm. Partly sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 64. Northwest winds to 5. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 4:44 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 6.5-foot tide. Followed by a low tide at 9:42. That will be a 3-foot tide. Our tide in the middle of the night will be at 3:45 a.m. and 8.9 feet. And our low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 10:41 a.m. and be minus 6/10. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 4:54 this afternoon of 11.5 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:26 p.m. of 4.3 feet. Your next high tide will be at 4:14 a.m. and be 13.7 feet. And your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 11:08 a.m. and be minus 1 foot. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory today, seas to 8 feet due to northeast winds to 20 knots. For tomorrow, variable 10 and seas to 4 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, northeast 20 today, seas to 6 feet, should come down to 4 feet by this afternoon. For tonight, northeast 15 in the evening, becoming variable 10. And for tomorrow, variable 10 and seas to 1 foot in the Shelikof. The Downtown Kodiak Revitalization Special Committee meeting is scheduled for June 3rd. That meeting will begin at 9 a.m. in the Kodiak Public Library, and the meeting is open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the city website, and the meeting will be web-streamed at the city website, too. For additional information, call the city clerk's office at 486-8636. But again, that's next Friday, 9 a.m., the Kodiak Public Library, the Kodiak Revitalization Special Committee. From the Kodiak Public Library, they are hosting their community beekeeping project this summer. Weekly hive checks are every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Call to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683. Also, Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m., the library hosts a Lego club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. No story time this week. But come to the garden party on Friday between 1 and 3 p.m. Grab your grubbies and help plant the library's summer pollinator garden. Call Lori for more information at 486-8688. Also on Friday at 3:30 p.m., the library's escape room opens for the summer. Gather a couple of friends, and you can use logic, instinct, and detective skills to figure out the clues to solve the puzzle. Open to all ages, children under 14 must be accompanied by an adult. Physical space is limited, so groups of three are recommended. Call the library at 486-8686 to reserve a spot. And Saturday at 11 a.m., the first session of Campfire Stories and S'mores. Come outside behind the library, sit by the fire pit, and enjoy various stories and delicious s'mores with Ms. Ani. This session is for kids 6 to 11 and an adult. Call the library at 486-8686 to sign up. And read beyond the beaten path. Sign up for Kodiak Public Library's summer reading program. All ages are welcome to participate and earn prizes. Use Beanstack to log your reading and to get involved. Check it out through kodiak.beanstack.org. For more information, call the library or drop by. And the library, of course, is open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Don't forget Water Hall, the commercial fishing-themed art exhibit, is still on display at the Kodiak Island Brewery. It's by Homer artist Katie Birch and was produced by the Kodiak Maritime Museum. Katie has fished her set net site in Ugashik Bay and Bristol Bay for decades, and the 11 pieces in this special show use objects and materials familiar to commercial fishermen to explore work, community, loss, and the natural world. Again, that's at the Kodiak Island Brewery.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.